welcome everyone to Selling to Schools Radio. I hope your day is going really well, and I want to thank you for taking time to listen in. We have a huge audience for this program. I'm your host, Glenn McCandless. For this channel, as well as the Selling to Schools website and our STS LinkedIn group, and I'm really excited about this annual radio program that's focused on jobs and careers in the edtech industry. It's one of our most popular annual broadcasts. You know, hiring patterns and compensation trends provide us with really important clues about the health of our business. There's valuable information for edtech professionals who might be seeking a new career opportunity, and also for managers who are looking for talent and have hiring plans. So here to dive into this very important topic with me is Mark Phillips. Mark is the president of Hire Education. By the way, that's H-I-R-E. And it's a recruiting firm that for over a decade has matched the talents of sales professionals with the needs of managers for edtech companies. I was interviewing Mark during the 2016 Florida Educational Technology Conference. Many of you know it as FETC. And it's really timely given the attendance of thousands of edtech professionals and having our fingers on the pulse of the industry. So let's get right to it. Mark, it's great to have you back on the show.
Happy to be here, Glenn. Thanks so much. Great, Mark. You know, this is a great opportunity every year to kind of get a reality check on the industry. I always say that the hiring trends and what's going on in your work is a reflection of the health of our industry. So that's why I like having you on the program, and it's so popular. So I always like to start with you, Mark. I think this is our fourth year, with just kind of a big view, a macro view of what's going on. So from your perspective, and we see the hiring and the demand for new talent, do you see that we're in a healthy state in our industry?
I do. We had a record year both in terms of number of placements and revenue and also hiring on our team. So those are all sort of reflections of just how healthy the industry is.
That is great. I know that's music to the ears of the people who are listening to this interview with you today. So another question that I've asked you over the past couple of years that's always interesting to me are about trends. Anything that you're observing in terms of, first of all, what areas of the market, what kind of solutions or things seem to be hot where people are really looking for sales talent?
We are seeing a number of new administrative software companies come about, not just the traditional student information systems or LMS, but you know, more creative approaches to assessment or reporting or data visualization. We're seeing a number of big data companies sort of pivoting and really honing in on a message. I think of a client of ours, Kickboard Education, as an example where they've really sort of narrowed in on a clear message that describes what they do and where their sort of highest value is. Those sort of jump out at me as the biggest trends that we've seen in terms of companies that are hiring sales talent.
That's great. There has been a big surge in administrative apps, so I'm not surprised to hear about that, Mark. What about on the hiring side? What kinds of benefits seem to be helpful for the people hiring? We always ask about this and talk about it every year. The balance between salary, commission, perks, and those kinds of things, health benefits. It's always a balancing act for someone who's considering a new jump to a new part of their career. Are you seeing any changes along those lines?
Not in the traditional, I put traditional in quotes, but not in the more experienced hires. You know, those always have been fairly close to a 50-50 split between salary and commissions. Benefits plans seem to be fairly similar, although it does feel like health plans are more on people's radar in the wake of Obamacare than they were previously. And I say that as a business owner, too. They're certainly on my radar as a provider of a health benefit. In terms of shifts in the marketplace and compensation, I think two things come to mind. One is we really saw salaries take off in New York and San Francisco. And it's not a surprise because all the reporting that we hear about those areas is that they're outrageously expensive, and that the rebound in the economy really has driven the cost of living up there. So we're seeing entry-level salaries, just to throw out a number, in the $75,000 range, which historically had been for somebody with a number of years of experience. I'm not seeing much change in salaries in, I'll call them Tier 2 cities. I don't know what the official name for them is, but the non-San Franciscos and the non-New York cities. We're not seeing much shift in salaries there. But in response to those shifts in New York and San Francisco, we're seeing clients really looking for entry-level salespeople. That, to me, is the biggest shift in employer needs from a sales perspective that I've seen in the last year. We've had 5 different clients that paid us to find essentially entry-level talent.
Wow, that's interesting. I always think about the entry level. Of course, it's one facet of our industry that seems to have a demand all the time. I always think about people that are more seasoned that want to increase their salary or find a new job opportunity. What kind of skill sets do you think are really important for people to be thinking about? If I'm a sales professional in the ed tech space, which is, of course, our area of interest, what kinds of things should I really be working on to improve my marketability as a sales professional?
That's a good question. I think the salespeople that make the most and have the longest tenure are working in the most complex sales environments. Many of those sales involve partner ecosystems. So a salesperson that can run point or be the lead for a complex deal that might involve a hardware, a software, a content, a systems integration provider. My sense is the salespeople running those kinds of deals are closing the biggest numbers, are posting the biggest commissions, and also seem to stick around a lot. I think part of that, too, is because those kinds of deals take a really long time to get done, and they don't happen often. So if I were counseling somebody that really wanted to be in the 95th percentile in terms of earning in our industry, I would look at the complexity of the deal and the capability of their employer to partner with and thereby increase their value proposition with other partner opportunities.
Sounds like a good plan. I think of problem-solving skills as kind of an umbrella for that. A great sales professional is a problem solver, figures a way to face an obstacle to getting a new customer or building the business and figures it out in that problem-solving mode. And of course, problem-based learning is very popular topic in our industry right now. So let's talk about geographic trends. You were talking about salary levels in some of the markets like California, which are reflective of the cost of living. Are there any geographic areas of the U.S. that you're seeing particularly strong demand for sales professionals?
The Southeast, and I'm going to include, rightly or wrongly, I'll include Texas in that designation. The Southeast is really strong right now. It's so interesting to me, having done this for 10 years, to sort of see from year to year where the little hotspots are. And in 2014 and early 15, we saw California come back, and California had been really quiet for a really long time. In terms of our portfolio, we have a tremendous amount of activity in the Southeast, and I think we've done 2 deals in Texas in the last month. So it feels like the southern states, including Texas, are pretty hot right now.
Well, that's always pretty interesting. We're sitting here in Florida at FETC, so those of you hear some background noise, it's typical of these conferences. And certainly there's been a lot of buzz here in Florida about the activity here just on the demand side, which has always been strong in the Southeast. So that is, I suppose, a great surprise, but nonetheless, it's something for our listeners to take note of. Also wonder about, Mark, another trend that I'm always interested in, and I know you are too. We've talked about it before, but that is the balance between field sales and inside sales.
Mm.
You know, there's people contacting me saying, hey, I'm trying to build an inside sales team because I'm tired of paying expenses for people to fly around or whatever. And then there's the more traditional field-based type thing. What are you seeing with that?
I see the exact same thing. That's so interesting that you bring that up. And I think that's, you know, when I mentioned a lot of entry-level hiring that's going on, I feel like a lot of that is going into, is populating inside sales teams. And I've had a couple conversations with CEOs that want to really dramatically shift away from a field strategy to an inside strategy. Actually, I can think of two clients that are active now where that is true. And I think both of those clients, they recognize the value of some relationships, in-person relationships. They'll keep on a couple field people, but they're not hiring 8 field people, and they're not going to carry 8 field people. They're going to carry 2 and another 10 inside salespeople that will probably cost them less overall. I think the jury's out on how effective that'll be. It feels to me like the schools still really appreciate and respond to in-person work.
Right.
So this is an experiment. We've seen it before. I mean, when SaaS really took off and really sort of got its legs as a thing, I think a lot of business owners thought, now we don't need to sell a multi-million dollar deal, and therefore I don't need a salesperson that can do that. We saw that shift back towards a pretty heavy field approach during the downturn especially. There are pendulums involved here and big trends that aren't maybe not that are maybe not even apparent to me, but my sense is that the heavy focus is on inside sales, and we'll see whether or not it's effective.
It's always interesting to see these shifts. Wanted to ask you also about the startups versus the established companies and how that's impacting your work. What are you seeing there? So anyone who's in the industry knows we've had a surge in startups over the past couple of years. There's been a lot of investment coming into the industry. And startups present an interesting challenge for people who are veterans and newcomers alike. Some people are risk averse. Other people are more entrepreneurial. How is the whole startup trend affecting your work, Mark, and what are you seeing there?
I tell people that at least 70% of our work is with early stage startups when they're just building their first teams. That number feels true to me. It might be off by a point or two, but the big true statement is we do a lot of work with startups, and that's what fuels a lot of our work. We're in an interesting period because, as you said, a couple of years ago, there was this flood of capital. All the reports seem to suggest that the flood of capital is still coming in, but I'm not seeing as many sort of seed stage companies launching. A number of those companies that we worked with 3 years ago during that sort of surge are now employing 120, 150 people, which is really exciting to see, but that presents a different hiring challenge than a seed stage startup going from the founding team to 10 people or something. So I feel like the ed tech, I'm doing air quotes for those of you that can't see me, the ed tech startup scene now is maturing a little bit. And you have some of these companies that did get their legs under them that were successful. And now, even though the reports are that Pearson and Blackboard and McGraw and HMH are still sort of acquiring a lot of companies, my sense is that acquisition work is not nearly as frequent as it was a couple of years ago. So what do these tweeners do? What do these companies do that get to 120 or 150 people? They may be profitable, but there still might be a lot more growth that requires additional capital. So I feel like I'm seeing more sort of Series C rounds, just later rounds, which indicates to me that the big companies that used to gobble up anybody that sort of proved the business to $5 million in annual revenue or something, I feel like they're being a little more selective, or we're seeing companies that have longer runways to some kind of exit.
Speaking of exit, we have reached the point in our interview today, Mark, when we're about out of time. So
I want to remind our audience to be sure to share this program with their EdTech industry colleagues and to tap into the amazing archive of sales and marketing advice on sellingtoschools.com and dozens of podcasts that are archived right here on Selling to Schools Radio. And Mark, what can I say?
I'm convinced that nobody has their pulse on the industry better than you do. And I really appreciate the opportunity annually to get together with you like this and share your insights and your perspective. It really is unique. You have that big view that very few of us have from so many aspects of this industry. And I know that our audience always appreciates you being here with me, Mark. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. So kind of you to think of me every year, and love offering or trying to offer some value to you and to your audience.
Thank you, Mark.